Okay, welcome back. Mitchell Henderson is with us once a week. Tonight is his night, and Mitch has presented some extraordinary material. His topic tonight is simply titled Other Sources. Before we jump into that, Mitch, welcome back. Let me play something here. How are you?
Thank you. Good.
All right. This is from Australia. Just got it. The Australian Premier says quarantine facilities, meaning camps, meaning death camps, will be needed for the unvaxxed. Just got this. I'm going to play this. I haven't heard it, but let's see what it has to say. Because many people believe the same thing is coming here. It's already being built in Canada. We know that. Here we go.
Well, well, well. Naughty, naughty Anastasia. You just admitted on camera that you've got a plan to put the unvaccinated into quarantine camps that you're building outside Brisbane and outside major cities. Listen to this, my fellow Australians. This is what the mainstream media won't pick up on. But Palaszczuk, the Queensland Premier, just admitted on camera that she is building quarantine camps for the unvaccinated. Listen to this.
Quarantine facility that you announced that will be built, I think, what, in the middle of next year? Do you still need that?
I think regional quarantine facilities are going to be needed into the future. We'll also need it for unvaccinated people.
Unvaccinated people. Unvaccinated people.
Now, you've heard that. That's her words, not my words. She admitted that it's for the unvaccinated. Now, look what she says next. The same day, at different press conferences, she actually threatens us, Australians. She says, get vaccinated before it's too late.
This is your last opportunity. This is your last chance to get vaccinated.
What do you mean too late? What? Going to come and arrest us and put us into camps? Is that where we're headed? Is that where we're headed, Australia? Is that what's going on? If you dare raise a finger at any of us or any of my fellow Australians, well, we'll see what happens.
Okay, so there you go. Beta test. They're running everything they can in Australia to find out what is going to be the limit of humankind. How much will they take? Looks like these camps are definitely going to be built, and I have a sneaking suspicion that they're going to be filled, unfortunately. Mitch, how does it look to you here?
Well, Australia's only got 25 million people, so this is a test run on a small scale for, if you want to look at it that way. We have 350 million people and growing by a million every month coming across the border. Those people are not vax people. The people that are coming across the border are not vax people.
Nor are they being made to get vaxxed. They're not even being tested.
To get vaccinated.
No.
Not only that, but look at how many people have had to give up their mortgages, their cars, their careers, their jobs, and whatnot because they did not want to get vaxxed. If a person is willing to give up their life, their home, their comfort in order to avoid the vaccination, then what makes them think that they're just going to go like sheep to some camp, okay? I think that's a rather foolish idea. Australians are not armed, so they're not dealing with armed people. But here, they're going to have to deal with armed people, an armed population. If you remember, there's checks and balances in our government. The legislative, the judicial, the executive are supposed to balance each other out. And then there was a fourth balance, and that was an armed population, because like Mao Zedong says, political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. The American population can take political power anytime they want to. They have the means by which to do it. We the people have the government outgunned very heavily. Okay, so whether they will try to get around to that, I'm sure, but they're gonna use stealth at first, I think, and when they start using force, that's when they're going to start getting hurt. There is so many people so angry at Joe Biden and his vaccine mandate because he's ruined so many people's lives. These are good, hardworking people's lives. He's destroyed their lives with his dictatorship. Okay, so
don't forget to mention Obama, please. He's
sure,
running
yes.
it.
Sure, yes. Obama and all of Obama's old staff.
That's
and
right.
The totalitarian impulse and stuff, okay. Well, there's a rebel impulse, too, in people, okay. They just have to be pushed to a certain limit. He's pushed people out of jobs, pushed people out of careers.
How about destroying families, destroying marriages, destroying relationships, destroying businesses? You can go on and
yes.
on. Yes.
Everything. He's creating a mass of angry people. But, you know, I don't think it's out of stupidity. I think, you know, this is all to destroy America. They don't want a dictatorship America. They want America completely destroyed. That is their goal.
Well, that's what I've been saying. And they want, they pulled the plug.
They're going to accomplish it.
And you know what they're going to do, Mitch, to seal the fate? They'll simply... Remember, there's not just one power grid. Don't ever think there is. There are grids all over the country. But they'll start to shut down grids in major city areas, major industrial areas, and watch people revert to the Middle Ages. No electricity. It'll take a few hours, and then they'll start to do the dirtiest things you can imagine to their fellow man and woman. It's going to be hell.
Oh, yeah.
They'll turn the electric off, and everything stops. Everything.
Well, they're shutting transportation down. They're shutting the food supply down.
Healthcare.
Electricity down. They'll tell healthcare down. Law enforcement down. Everything. If they turn law enforcement down, I don't know who it is that's going to be marching people off to camps. Hopefully the day will come when we're marching them off to a camp for extermination. Okay? So, hopefully this will flip the other way, you know.
Well, I would hope. Hope isn't going to do it, though. We're going to have resolve, and we're going to have people who will stand up and lay their lives on the line to save this country.
Listen, people have gone to war for 200 years, and they've died for much less.
Much less.
So, you know, we have enough Americans that have some things. So,
and think of all the... one other thing, Mitch, before you go... on here, there are a lot of military people who are apparently going to be discharged honorably, just discharged, is going to get rid of them. Those people need to organize. They need to organize with militia types, with American citizens who are activists. There has to be an organization of them. And I don't know how it's going to happen, but there are leaders out there.
Well, there are militias out there already. I've previously stated that in talking to these militias, and some of them are quite large, and they train proficiently. They have ex-military people training them and so forth. But they have a rule. If they don't know you for at least 3 years, they're not going to talk to you about anything. So it's a security manager. It's just like the government has operational security.
Glad to hear it.
These people in the militias, they know about operational security, too. Some of them have practiced operational security in real-world scenarios. So, you know, it's like just because you don't hear anything, the fact that you don't hear anything is a good thing. Because if you're not hearing it, well, they're not hearing it either. Right?
Got it. Yep. Okay, tonight, other sources. Other sources. What do you have?
Okay, so I've used my experience as a police investigator and military intelligence staff officer to look at open sources all around the world, plus a little inside information to connect the dots of what's happening in the world. I put more weight on those who conspire to kill us than what they say, than on commentary about it. It is not conspiracy theory because it comes directly from the conspirators themselves, so it is conspiracy fact. Collecting and analyzing intelligence is the art of looking at everything to create a picture of the situation. The situation will dictate your tactics and strategy. Intelligence is a combat multiplier because to be forewarned is to be forearmed. You only ignore any given source of intelligence at your peril. The measure of an intelligence source's validity is how predictive it has been in the past. So just like for any spy that we hire in another country, we look at his track record to see if what he says is real. okay, and we grade spies that we have recruited based on how good their information is, and how good it is depends on how much it comes true, okay, or how predictive it can be. Things that occur today were planned or caused in the past. If you look at the events of today, the causation can be traced back to the beginning. Look back as far as possible. Actually, everybody should be doing this all the time now. Why do this? Well, consider how we look at time. We face the future and the past is behind us. But the ancient Greeks saw it differently. They faced the past because they could see the past, and to their backs was the future because it could not be seen. Knowledge was to determine from the past where we are headed in the future. So I want to look at a source written in 96 AD, look at what it says and compare it to the historical reality to see if it is reliable intelligence and to see if what it tells us about where we are in history and what is next. I'm not approaching this from a religious point of view, but from an intelligence analysis point of view.
Got it.
I'm not going to repeat what you've heard many times before. I'm going to ask you to consider things people have not brought to your attention. You can judge if the source means exactly what it says as compared to actual events or not. I am here to give information so you can utilize your own intellect to determine if it matches or not. So my source tonight is the Seven Seals of the Apocalypse. Do they have obvious correlations to actual history? So just for people's information, I'm utilizing St. Jerome's Bible because it was completed in 384 A.D., and it's the oldest Bible translation that I could find. I did not select it for sect or denominational reasons. I'm not here to talk about religion. I'm here to talk about history and a distinct pattern of history. Okay? So, this is from Revelation chapter 6 through 8, and it was written between 95 and 96 A.D. by John of Patmos, okay? So the first seal, I'll quote it, it says, I looked, and there was a white horse. Its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown. He rode out as a conqueror to conquer. Okay, so let's compare that to actual history. In 1415, Prince Henry the Navigator of Portugal started seeking a route to bypass the Islamic Ottoman Empire in order to obtain spices and other goods from Asia cheaper by cutting out the middlemen, the Muslims. At first, they wanted to establish ports in North Africa to get caravans crossing the Sahara to come directly to them. They captured the first such port city in Ceuta in what is now Morocco in 1415. Okay. In 1492, the Spanish sent Columbus to sail due west to see if they could find the East Indies in that direction. He found the West Indies instead. In 1498, the Portuguese sent Vasco da Gama to go south around Africa, past the Cape of Good Hope, to reach the Indian Ocean, and he discovered the East Indies for Portugal. The Spaniard Fernando Magellan followed this route to the East Indies from 1505 to 1512 to establish trading points and conduct trade. In 1519, the Spanish crown sent Magellan west by the south tip of South America to proceed west and reach the actual East Indies. He claimed Guam and the Philippines for Spain. Soon, British, French, Dutch, Danish, Belgian, and German explorers spread out throughout the world to conquer every land for the Europeans. Okay? So by the beginning of World War I in 1914, every nation on Earth was under direct rule of a European power except Turkey, Japan, and Thailand. In 1898, the United States had taken many Spanish colonies over, such as Puerto Rico, Cuba, Guam, and the Philippines. The U.S. also took Hawaii after a coup d'etat in 1898 also. In 1918, after World War I, the French took over the German African colonies of Togo and Cameroon, while the British seized what is now Namibia and Tanzania from the Germans. The U.S. took American Samoa from the Germans. The Japanese took over the German colonies in China, like Kiao Chau and Tsingtao, as well as the Mariana Islands, the Caroline Islands, and the Marshall Islands in the Pacific. The British took the German colony of New Guinea. After the Ottoman Empire's defeat in World War I, Allied forces occupied Turkey from 1918 until the Treaty of Lausanne in 1923 with the creation of the modern Turkish state. So this is the point where Turkey became occupied. Okay? That was one of the three exceptions. Okay, China itself right. came under European domination by being divided into spheres of influence by European and Japanese forces, with Sinkiang and Inner Mongolia under Russian influence, China proper, Kwantung province, and Tibet under British influence, Yunnan province under French influence, that's just the province north of Vietnam, and Taiwan, Korea, and Manchuria under direct Japanese control. Portuguese had a colony on the Chinese mainland called Macau until 1999, and the British colony on the Chinese mainland until 1998 called Hong Kong. Japan also invaded Thailand in 1941, making them an ally and a puppet state. In 1945, the British invaded Thailand and occupied it to oust the Japanese, but the British relinquished control of Thailand with the signing of the Anglo-Thai Peace Treaty in January 1946. After World War II, the United States occupied all of Japan except the Kuril Islands, which the Russians took. And Korea itself was occupied by Russia in the north and the USA in the south. The coast of China was occupied by British and American forces until Chinese nationalist forces could arrive. My father is a part of that occupation. In other words, by 1946, white European powers ruled over every nation on the face of the earth by force of arms. The white horse with a crown and a bow had conquered everything on earth between 1415 and 1946. The time between the opening of this first seal and the opening of the second seal in 1848 with the Communist Manifesto was 433 years. Okay, the second seal says another horse came out, a red one. Its rider was given power to bring war on earth so that men should kill each other. He was given a large sword. Now, when you think of red, just think of what reds are, what we've always called reds. Reds are the commies, the communists, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So the actual history is the Industrial Revolution is a Kampian philosophical enlightenment which gave white Europeans the power and ideology to conquer the world, also brought about new ideologies in response to working conditions and the first modern messiah of the Jewish people. Napoleon had liberated and assimilated Jewish people in his empire to give them equality. By the end of the Congress of Vienna, which formally ended the Napoleonic Wars, Jewish people were stigmatized once again, and the French monarchy was restored. The major impetus was the French Revolution, which was led by the Jacobins. Jacobins were leftists, and like all leftist revolutions, included a reign of terror between 1793 and 94, where they executed over 10,000 people for being politically incorrect. It was Napoleon who rose from that mess in 1799 to liberate Europe from all the old order and liberate the Jewish people. As a consequence of his failure, a previous liberated German Jew named Moses Hess wrote a book called The Holy History of Mankind in 1832, mm-hmm. which formally created both communism and Zionism. Hess talked Marx and Engels into communism and Theodor Herzl into Zionism. Marx and Engels published the Communist Manifesto in 1848. They were the Reds, the first attempt at taking over Europe, because if you took over Europe, you basically took over the world at that time.
Sure, by extension,
the revolution,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
The revolutions of 1848, which all failed. It was not until the Marxist-Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 in Russia that they succeeded in taking political power. Between 1919 and 1923, the British, French, and American forces invaded the Soviet Union to support what was called the White Army to destroy the Red Army. the Reds won. They built their military might up, and by 1945 had a great sword, a great military power. After World War II, the Reds gave support to anti-colonial movements to break white European power and brought war to the whole earth so that men could kill each other under the impetus of red communism. This was called the Cold War. So, do we need to take a commercial break at this point? Or?
Oh, go ahead. You got another minute.
Okay.
You want to stop there? We can. That's fine. Let me ask you a question. What was the difference here in Bolshevik Russia? What happened that allowed the Bolsheviks to actually overthrow the Tsar? Russia was not a primitive country. What was their big advantage?
Well,
what was their edge?
First, the Democrats took over. That was the Alexander Kerensky government in 1917. So it was Democrats that actually overthrew the Tsar and instituted a democracy form of government. However, within the Duma, or that Congress that they had what they call social democrats, which were communists, and they had two types, Mensheviks and Bolsheviks. Mensheviks were the majority party, the majority communists, and the Bolsheviks were actually the minority communists.
Okay.
So, it's like the communists took over from a democracy. We always think of democracy coming out of communism, but every communist country was a democracy first.
Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Now, take a break. When we come back, I want you to pull that telephone a little bit further away, another inch or two.
Okay.
We got your audio is great, but you're getting a little close there. Okay. Be right back with Mitchell in just a minute. Hold on. Welcome back. I hate to belabor this, but anyone who accepts this administration as being legitimate is insane or a communist. It is not. And the alleged president is a pervert who has a long, long history of, let me qualify this, pedophilia-like behaviors with little children. I just got another video. I'll be putting this up shortly. He's in a preschool classroom. Children are at their desks, which is actually a long table, and they're sitting in their little chairs, and they have little games like Legos and things. And this dirty SOB comes up to this little boy. You're not going to believe this. And I want you to watch it in slow motion. Back it up, start it, stop it, whatever. He comes up behind this little boy, who couldn't be more than four or five, and he straddles him. He puts one leg left, one leg right. And then he puts his hands, his left hand and his right hand, on the little boy's shoulders. He rubs them. And then he pulls the little boy by his shoulders back between Biden's legs, between his knees. And then he slowly pulls his hands up off the little boy's shoulders and stands up straight and backs away. This guy should be locked away forever, along with his kid. If anybody else did this to a little boy, they'd be in jail. They'd be gone. Will you see this, Mitch? This guy is sick. He is sick.
Well, listen. Pedophilia is a part. Is a Marxist.
I know.
To destroy the family and stuff. They encourage pedophilia.
Yep.
And,
I know. But to see it, it makes me want to puke. I can't. This guy is really, he's way beyond the pall. Go ahead.
So, anyways, to continue with the communists, Italian Marxist philosopher Antonio Gramsci predicted in the 1920s that USSR would fail. He said that people unthinkingly acquiesce to the culture that they are born into. People do not necessarily acquiesce to political power imposed on them, so the culture had to change in order for people to truly buy into Marxism. People in the USSR did not have communism in their heart and soul. So cultural Marxism was born at the Frankfurt School of Marx and Freudianism to create a global Marxist culture. In 1936, they moved to New York City and took charge of Columbia University Teachers College to start indoctrinating young people into Marxism. Adorno and Horkheimer, two cultural Marxists, decided that calling their Marxism Marxism would turn Americans off, so they created a euphemism to disguise Marxism and called it critical theory. Instead of appealing to workers of the world to unite, they invented concepts of intersectionality and critical race theory with the positive reinforcements of the free love movement and feminist and gay empowerment to break the hold of white power and privilege. The cultural Marxist dream finally paid off by rigging an election so that a Marxist government could come to power in 2021. In the most powerful white nation on earth, and under Chairman Joe Biden, impose a Marxist totalitarian regime in the United States. From the opening of the Second Seal to the Communist Manifesto to the opening of the Third Seal in 1945 was 97 years. This is when black African decolonization also started. So just as a strategic note, the Marxists are well-versed in psychology and sociology, as you can tell by the Freudianism, including that, as tools to manipulate people. They applied the lessons of the 1963 Milgram experiment to take power. In 1963, Stanley Milgram of Yale set up an experiment where a guy in a doctor's coat tells people to administer shocks to subjects in the other room. No shocks were given. The light just came on to let the subject know that he was being shocked so he could scream. The doctors had them increase the voltage to cause more pain. What Milgram expected was that normal, everyday, decent people would refuse to inflict pain. But since the doctor in a doctor's coat was giving orders, most people complied. That is how they used public health to create the Marxist police state that we now live in. Okay, so
let's go on to the third seal.
I looked, and there was a black horse. Its rider had a pair of scales in its hand. I heard what sounded like a voice coming from among the four living creatures, which said a quart of wheat for a day's wages and three quarts of barley for a day's wages, but do not damage the olive trees or the vineyards. The struggle for black equality began with the Jacobins, which were proto-Marxists, in 1789 with the French Revolution and its resultant abolishing of slavery in France and all French colonies in 1794. In 1798, Napoleon abolished slavery in all lands he conquered. However, Napoleon reinstated slavery in the French colonies that produced sugarcane. This caused deep resentment and anger among the recently freed slaves to find themselves once again living in slavery. In 1804, the second anti-colonial rebellion took place in Haiti when it declared its independence and abolished slavery again. During this rebellion, they murdered all white people in Haiti. In 1808, the USA made the importation of slaves a crime. From 1861 to 1865, one white man died to free every 10 black slaves. 400,000 white men died to abolish slavery in the United States. That sacrifice means absolutely nothing nowadays. Mm-hmm. Those soldiers sacrificed their lives for an ungrateful people. It was not until 1945 did black equality open in force, aided by the Marxists, to open the wars of decolonization, which the Marxists supported materially and financially. This is the opening of the Third Seal. You can see that just as the white horse created the conditions to create the red horse, from its inception, pushed for black equality. Scales are measuring devices to measure equality. After World War II, Marxists supported anti-colonial struggles in every colony in Africa was abolished by 1980. Some of those liberations even involved UN forces in the Congo to murder white people in the streets, just at random, which they did. Our United Nations was in there blowing away the white folks, okay? This equality was complete by 1992 when apartheid was abolished in the Republic of South Africa. The free Zimbabwe was taken over by Marxists who confiscated all white farms, turning Zimbabwe from the breadbasket of Africa to the basket case of Africa. Since 2010, the Marxist government of South Africa has seen confiscation of white-owned properties and the encouragement of Marxist politicians for white people to be murdered, and the rampant murder of South African farmers by black criminals and Marxists, as noted by Lauren Southern in her documentary Farmlands. Okay. In 2020, the United States, the calls for white genocide by both academics and politicians has become ubiquitous. Not over equality already achieved, but over equity that wants to make people of color more equal than white people. It was admitted Marxist revolutionary Black Lives Matter that started burning down our cities and even increasing the unpunished spiral of attacks and murders of white people in America. Now, there's black people like in North Atlanta that just go into white, rich white neighborhoods and blow away people jogging or walking their dog or whatever. Okay, so you don't hear much about it, but it's happening, widespread. Okay. Mm-hmm. Only nations that have widespread black slavery right now are the black African nations of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Sudan, and Nigeria. The only places where you can go and live today, and even as a foreigner resident in their country, where you can buy black slaves on the open market are the Islamic nations of Mauritania, Libya, and Sudan. Huh. Another component is the mention of famine in the third seal. Marxists have always used food as a weapon. Think now about what they're about to do here. Marxists have always used food as a weapon and famine as a method of population control. From 1967 to 1970, Marxist leaders in Nigeria murdered 1 million Biafrans by starvation to keep Biafra from becoming an independent nation. Biafrans are mostly Christians and resented the rule and kleptocracy of the Muslim left that was oppressing them. In 1983 to 1993, Uganda, the Lord's Resistance Army went to war with the government, and the famine was used by them to starve the people into submission. 250,000 people died. Between 83 and 85, the communist Mengistu regime in Ethiopia used food as a weapon. They even taxed relief food being flown in, and if you wanted to eat any of that, you had to submit to the communist government. You'll see this coming here in America soon. The Marxists murdered over 1 million people to accomplish that. As you see, the artificially induced inflation and supply chain disruptions in the USA, take note that the Marxists intend to starve you to death if you do not submit to them. The USSR did it in the Ukraine in the 1930s, killing upward of 60 million people. The Chinese communists did it in the Great Leap Forward in the 1950s and the Great Cultural Revolution of the 1960s, killing over 138 million people. And Marxist Pol Pot killed half the Cambodians in Cambodia after 1975 to gain their submission. The USA actually supported the Khmer Rouge against the Vietnamese. Once you get used to letting people die, it becomes easy. Marxists mean you harm. Our government is Marxist. They mean you harm. The time between the opening of the third seal, starting with the wars of decolonization in 1945, the opening of the fourth seal is 45 years.
And
the fourth seal says, I looked, and there was a pale-covered colored horse. Its rider's name was Death, and Hades followed close behind. They were given authority over one-fourth of the earth to kill by means of war, famine, disease, and wild animals. Mm-hmm. First, we need to get the wording right to understand this. When I read the Bible in Spanish, the fourth horse was called the Caballo Amarillo, which means the yellow horse. So I looked it up in the original Greek, and it said koros, which translates to yellow-green in English. This makes all of the difference in the world. So in actual history, what is yellow and green? Islam is. If you Google it, you will see that the Sunni militias use green flags, like Hamas, and the Shia militias use yellow flags, like Hezbollah and the Battle Brigades. Out of 8 billion people on Earth, about 2 billion are Muslims, giving Islam authority over a fourth of the Earth, just as it says there. In 1979, there were two major events in the Muslim world. Sunni extremists laid siege to the Holy Mosque in Mecca, which was unsuccessful, and Shia extremists took over Iran from the Shah, thanks to Jimmy Carter. In 1980, Saddam Hussein's Iraq, Sunni, invaded Iran, sending off the first Gulf War that lasted 1980 to 88. Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990, sending off the second Gulf War, 1990 to 91. And finally, the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2003, which is the third Gulf War, was 2003 to present because it's still going on. Also in 1979, the USSR invaded Afghanistan, keeping it at war for 10 years. In 2001, the USA invaded Afghanistan, keeping it at war for 20 years. So 10 million Muslims have died from war since 1980, 90% killed by other Muslims. 12 million Muslims have died from famine since 1980. 14 million Muslims have died from disease since 1980. I cannot find any statistics on how many Muslims were killed by wild beasts, but if we call Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and ISIS wild animals, they have killed 719,000 people, mostly Muslims. The time before, between the opening of the fourth seal in 1980 to the opening of the fifth seal in 2003 is 23 years.
It's a cultural national pastime, it seems like.
Sure.
But weird.
It's what they do, you know? So the fifth seal, I'm not going to quote it. It just talks about all the Christians being murdered for their faith and how many more have yet to be persecuted. It doesn't give an exact number. Since Christ died in about 29 A.D. until 2003, when the Satanist George Bush, keep in mind he's the grandson of Aleister Crowley through his mom, okay, invaded in Iraq in 2003, there were an average of 27,000 Christian martyrs per year. After George Bush invaded Iraq in 2003, an average of 100,000 Christians are martyred every year. Christianity has been wiped out in Somalia since Bush Sr. invaded in 1992, in Iraq since Bush Jr. invaded in 2003. It has been wiped out in Libya since 2011, thanks to Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. And the Clintonistas give $1.5 billion to Al-Qaeda to try to wipe out all the Christians in Syria since 2012. But thanks to Bashar Assad, he protects Christians with the help of Russians. The USA is the largest supporter of murdering Christians on the face of the earth. In March 2020, Christians' constitutional rights to freedom of religion has been suspended under the public health dictatorship. In the past year, pastors have been arrested for holding church services, and informers have told the police about house churches so those meetings could be halted. People seeking Christian religious exemptions to the vaccine mandate have been summarily put on unpaid leave indefinitely. This is all done in direct violation of the Bill of Rights, which doesn't exist anymore. There's a fiction that it does. It's a fiction that we're free people. It's a fiction that this is a free country. Okay, and people need
it
to
wake
up to
that. It is a fiction. That's a perfect word. It's a fiction. It's a construct. It's sci-fi. It's not real.
Right. Oh. So the time between the renewed persecutions of Christians under George Bush in 2003 and the end of religious freedom in the Western world in 2020 is 17 years. The sixth seal is not yet open, but if you follow the trend of a woman in labor paradigm, It was 433 years between seals 1 and 2, 97 years between 2 and 3, 45 years between 3 and 4, and 23 years between 4 and 5. And already 17 years have lapsed between seal 5 and now. So let's talk briefly about the sixth seal, because it hasn't happened yet. It says, "And I saw a lamb open the sixth seal, and there was a violent earthquake, and the sun became black, like coarse black cloth, and the moon turned completely red like blood. The stars fell down to the earth like unripe figs falling from a tree when a strong wind..."
The stars fell down to the earth. The stars fell...
Right.
Is this a reference to meteorites? Asteroids?
Well, no, I'll get to that in a minute. Okay.
All right.
So the sky...
Yeah, keep that phone. You sound good. Keep that phone away. Pull it away. You're good.
Okay. So the sky disappeared like a scroll being rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved from its place. It's not yet happened, but we can tell what it is. A violent earthquake that obstructs the sun and moon would have to be a volcanic earthquake, because without volcanoes, nothing in an earthquake is ejected into the sky. The Fukushima earthquake moved Japan 8 feet towards the United States. The entire island of Japan was moved from its place in that earthquake. Okay?
Right, right.
We know now that stars cannot fall towards the Earth. If you've ever seen incoming missiles, it looks like a star coming at you. I believe this is talking about nuclear war. Just to clarify, the sky rolling up like a skull describes nuclear weapons, because the Greek word for sky is Uranus. Uranium is called the sky element. And by smashing two subcritical masses together is the basis of making a nuclear explosion. Okay. So there we have it. We're 17 years into this, and the last one was a 23-year difference. So that's why I tell people they need to panic, because this stuff is going to happen very soon.
Okay. All right, hold on.
We're talking about almost simultaneously a nuclear war and an earthquake.
All right. When you say people need to panic... Let's flesh that out just a little bit. You're talking about panic as in prepare.
Right.
We don't want people just running around the streets.
You have to do something now. It's not time to sit around and
oh, no, we're out of time.
You've got, you know, if you're not already prepared somewhat, you need to get as prepared as you can be, you know. I mean, if you live in a city, for goodness sakes, get a go bag. Or something. Find someplace out in the woods and pre-position supplies out there. I mean, you may have a month or two, maybe three, maybe more.
If it's 6 months without electricity, 6 months without electricity is what DHS said. In fact, they said 6 months or more without electricity in various parts of the country. And if they start shutting off the grid to major cities, these are going to be hell on earth.
Well, listen, Ted Koppel wrote a book a couple of years ago. Yeah. I forget what the name of it is, but Ted Koppel is a mainstream media guy.
Well, he's one of them, too.
I
think he's CFR. Maybe not, but he knows what's going on. He knows what's coming.
And he said from government sources that if you cut the American electrical grid down, that 90% of the American population will be dead within 1 year. That's an official government prediction. Okay.
I would not dismiss that at all. Koppel knows. Okay. He knows.
Yeah.
So play that over and over again in your head. Pay very close attention to it. That's a warning that needs to be. I think he was clearly given the green light to publish that. They always tell us. They don't hide it.
They tell us everything that they're going to do. Now, day to day, they tell us the propaganda, but the minutes from their meetings and stuff, those are public, and they are
correct.
Telling you what they're going to do. There's no, like I said last time about Kissinger, he said, if we can get everybody to vaccinate, then it's game over. And he basically said, and he said that people will be paying for their own extermination. Okay. Because, you know, you do realize that these vaccines are not free. The U.S. government gives the vaccine companies money, pays for them, pays a very right. big price for them. Okay. So I also want to mention, you know, Africa hasn't been crazy. Sub-Saharan Africa has not been crazy about taking the vaccine. But the World Health Organization, they have discovered a vaccine, made a vaccine for malaria. Miracle of all miracles. Like,
I'm sure it'll be an mRNA vaccine, too. Watch.
Well, you know what? That vaccine, when I looked at it, when I read about what it was made up of, it's just the same thing is all it is. Okay. It no more protects you from malaria than this COVID vaccine protects you from COVID. Okay.
A bioweapon. Look for stories and headlines right now. The new news front page is going up shortly, but you'll still find these. DHS says Americans need to start prepping for up to 6 months without electricity or more. Now, that was in December of 2019. Understand that. That's going 3 years ago this December. DHS says Americans need to start prepping 3 years ago for up to 6 months without electricity. I pulled that story back up and ran it. Hopefully, it might make a difference for some people. Homeland Security warning to prepare for 6 months of electric grid down. There's a video for that. Official, and you can look at the official government report. It's an NIAC report warning of 6 months of power outage after a major grid failure. Please pay attention to that. That's a warning. They're telling us what's going to happen. Get ready. Final comment, Mitch, real quick.
Well, no, there's in the military, they used to tell us what was coming down the pike. And then if we complained about it later, they always said, F you, you were told. So this is what the government's been doing to us. They are telling
right.
us what they're going to do to us.
That's right.
And then when we complain about it, they're just going to say, F you, you were told. That is a military aphorism there. Okay, so everybody needs to do what they can, you know,
as soon as you can. Okay,
right.
Very good. All right, Mitchell, thank you. Excellent. Talk to you next week. I hope we're here next week. It's getting to be about that bad out there.
Yeah, I've started to look at things like, you know, the time may come when we're telling people not to get vaccinated. The time may come where they shut us down, you know.
We'll see.
They can
Thank
get
you.
Around to us.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night. Mitchell Henderson, and we'll have this up in his columnist archive tonight. Later on. Back in a minute. Hold on.